God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. And also we can use the chat function to send phone numbers to newcomers privately if we wish. I see a hand. Anna.
My name is Carter. I'm an alcoholic in my first 30 days, just coming back.
Welcome, Carter.
Thanks.
Welcome, Carter. Anna?
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm an alcoholic, and I am on day 27.
Welcome. All right. Anyone else? Okay.
Hello.
And beg your pardon?
Hello. My name is Jeffrey. I'm on day 9.
Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Jeffrey, glad you're here, brother.
Yeah, thank you. I took you up on your offer.
Great. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, guys.
Anyone else? I don't see any other hands, though. I have asked Amy to read the preamble for me. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and handle that myself. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight, which is step one. And please welcome our speakers this evening. We have joining us tonight, Luann and Esty. Thank you. I'm going to start with the reading on page Roman numeral 26, that's XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Esty and Luann, I'll let you decide who starts first.
Thank you. Luann, would you like to go? I don't mind.
Sure. Hey, my friends, Luann, alcoholic, and thank you, Amy, for inviting us here tonight, and Dave and Malcolm for getting this deal going. I appreciate it. And, you know, Carl and Anna, new coming back, you know, welcome back. You know, we're happy to have you here. So my experience with this, wow, you know, so Dr. Silkworth and his theory that we talk about, no one before ever was able to come to what he came to. People are getting lobotomies and all kinds of stuff, you know. So, you know, when Dr. Silkworth writes about this, his views, the first thing that hits me is the statement confirming that we have suffered alcoholic torture. I didn't even know what that was. You know, as we get into this a little bit further, I thought that everybody drank the way I drank. I thought that everybody did what I did. The torture that my mind was so stuck, you know, drinking, not drinking, what happens when I don't drink? It was torturous, you know. I didn't understand that my body was different than anyone else. When my mom had a drink and she started to talk about feeling it, I was like, game on, you know, like, do it, like, just chug it. And she wasn't like that, you know. This also talks about the alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as normal as his mind. Do I believe this? In the very beginning, I was hoping that somebody would tell me I could drink again, because I was still so sick and suffering that I just, you know, I wanted somebody to tell me, you know, that it was okay. So, you know, my body's different. You know, I get thirsty when I drink, and that's what happens to me. My thinking mind, you know, when I veer off, I'm thinking about drinking. And I thought everybody did. And I talked to my brother, I guess about a year ago now. And I said, yeah, remember we were kids, we were going to the concert and, you know, we would get all the beer ready to go and we would make sure we were all like fired up and blah, blah, blah. He's like, I never thought about that. So what do you mean you never thought about that? I'm like, how could you not? We're going to a concert. He goes, I thought about going to a concert. And I was like, oh my gosh, like who thinks about just going to a concert? You know, it's like, bring it in, bring whatever you got, just bring it with you. You know, so my mind just doesn't leave it alone. It just continuously thinks about drinking. And when the doctor talks about our bodies were sickened as well, and our belief, any picture of the alcoholics was leave this out, the physical factor is incomplete, you know. So I have the inability to stop, you know. My mind can't tell me I need to stop. It just tells me to go. I don't have that turn off filter, you know, that I have my abnormal reaction is that I feel this. You know, we talk about this theory that's coming up. I just had a very tough time the first time my experience with this. A woman gave me the book and she just said, read the doctor's opinion every night before you go to bed. And it was like, I heard static. And it wasn't until somebody actually went through this with me to help me really understand and talk about who I am and what I am, where, you know, I was able to understand who I was. So I started feeling better when I was reaching toward the bottle. I got that. Because I just knew what it was going to do for me. I just knew what it was going to do for me. So when they talk about, you know, the ex-problem drinkers, you know, these guys knew exactly what I was going through. Esty, I want to let you take over here. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you for your share, Luann. Thank you, everyone, for having us here tonight. Thank you, Luann, for asking me to speak with you. My home group is the Airmont Group, located in Rockland County, New York. And I have a sponsor and I sponsor others. And my sobriety date is June 25th of 2017. I'm really glad that we're at the first step and that this is the first reading that you provided us because, you know, I share it all the time. This basic, you know, the very basic obvious problem of the alcoholic is that he cannot control his liquor consumption, right? That was obvious to me. The first thing that became obvious to me when I started recovering Alcoholics Anonymous. So it was easier for me to get with that concept first and then to be able to understand the other components of my disease, the mental and the spiritual part, when I saw the insanity of the physical part. And you know, the physician, right, this Dr. Silkworth, who worked with many, many alcoholics, including Bill Wilson, one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. He gave Bill a letter to share with the public, and it didn't really go into so much depth about this physical aspect, right? So Bill, being the lovely alcoholic that he is, asked for him to write a more detailed letter. And I'm so glad that he did, and that he advocated for the process that he saw, the miracles that he saw happening right before his eyes, so that somebody like me, who doesn't know what they're suffering from, can open the book, like Luann said, with a sponsor, somebody who's been through it and has recovered, and start to finally understand these things, which I could never even, they never even like came into my brain. You know, I never even contemplated sobriety. It didn't even occur to me that there existed people who purposely didn't drink. It just never even got that far for me. So when I opened that book with my sponsor and we read it line by line, I related immediately to this physical allergy that Dr. Silkworth provided Bill with. You know, the fact that for some reason, and I don't know why, and frankly, I don't care. What matters is that I have it or I don't. When I put alcohol into my body, and even, you know, before it enters my body, just knowing that it's going to enter my body produces an effect in me, an effect that doesn't happen to other people, you know? And once it's inside my body, it takes over, you know, and it tells me who I'm hanging out with and how long I'm staying out for and how many more drinks I'm having. Usually I don't know, you know, it starts to decide things for me. And to a person who doesn't have this physical aspect, it just doesn't make sense, right? But for a person who does have it, it doesn't make sense to me that you could choose. And that someone normal can choose. You know, lots of people suffer from, you know, unfortunately, mental illnesses, anxiety, depression, and the like. Most people suffer from a spiritual malady. But what separates the alcoholic as a special entity is this physical aspect. You know, some people don't have to do the things that I have to do to live a successful life, because perhaps they are not as alcoholic as some of us were, right? So I think it's super important to, you know, to talk to a newcomer first and foremost about this physical allergy. And it, you know, the book spends many pages on that alone, you know, so it must be very, very important and critical for my coming to admit to my innermost self what it is that I suffer from. And that is all I will share. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next reading is from page Roman numeral 28. That's XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Luann?
Guys, again, thanks, Luann Alcoholic. And so what I love about this paragraph too is the allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. You know, for me, it's not only the booze, it's other things that I can't partake in. But for respect for the bottle and alcohol, that means when I go to a restaurant, I'm going to ask what's in that food. I've got to be mindful. For me, I eat a lot of raw stuff. I'm plant-based. What does my tincture have in it? You know, is there alcohol in the tincture? Whatever I'm using, because I am not like other people, and I am not willing to take that chance no matter what. Any supplements that I take, even if there's sugar in it, you know, there's sugar in like ketchup or whatever. I'm like, I'm loading my food up with it. You know what I'm saying? Because I will get that no matter what it is for me. So I've got to be really careful. You know, this paragraph, we talk about like identifying the alcoholic craving. You know, what happens to me when I have that first drink? Well, for me, my body is just, it's, we were talking about it a few weeks ago where, you know, we're going to drink and it's, if it's happy hour, we're like stacking them five behind each other and somebody else will be like, can I have a skinny mini martini? I'm like, just one? Like who gets just one? You know, how, like we're having shots and we're having this and we're that, you know, I just can't get enough. I just can't get enough. And when we were kids, you know, we're not pouring in the glasses. We're drinking it out of bottles, you know? So I'm drinking it out of a bottle as a kid. My mom didn't do stuff like that, you know? So when I take a drink, I want more. I just get more thirsty. You know, my body is begging for the next and demanding the next, insisting on the next. And I'm waking up in places that I never thought I would visit. You know, those were the things that, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't anticipate me waking up in a place that wasn't suitable for a young woman like me, you know, but I found my place there, whether it was a train station or wherever, like it, wherever, floors, I don't know. My friends would send me pictures of toilets saying, look familiar, because I'd always wind up puking somewhere or passed out somewhere. So having lost my reliance upon things human that we talk about this and our problems piling up, becoming astonishingly different, difficult to solve, I just couldn't help me. I just couldn't help me. So I really thought, again, that this, when we talk about this, that alcohol, the effect that alcohol had on somebody like me, it was almost like, you know, I heard it for the first time. And when my sponsor took me through this the first time and asked me to identify that alcoholic craving, you know, I was going through this and I'm scared, you know, and, you know, we talked about that craving, that it was different than the mental obsession, you know, so I had both and some people do and some people don't, whatever it is for you. I'm just always thinking about it, you know, when I'm not recovered and, that it was brought up earlier. Thankfully I've been recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind. Like I'm not cured, but I don't have that obsession to drink anymore. If something happens, my mind doesn't go to, I want to pick up. It goes to something different today because we've been provided with a solution. So I got the chance to get closer to a God of my experience, which is different than anything I ever knew. And for that, I'm grateful. This talks about, we read Froth the Emotional Appeal, right, Malcolm?
Beg your pardon?
Did you read, I totally forget. You read Froth the Emotional Appeal, right?
No, I did not.
All right, I forget everything. Yeah. I'm like 10 second Tom, you know? But Esty, we'll let you talk about this paragraph. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. And since I always forget too, would you mind pulling it back up, Malcolm?
Actually, that's David's thing, but I'm gonna read it again. Beg your pardon. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is
there
a man. Oh, you can see it.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. So that's the whole, there's a lot of key words here for me. And you know, the manifestation. The manifestation is what I see, right? And this is what I did when I thought, not about being an alcoholic, because I would never let it get that far, but when I thought about my drinking being problematic, right? I would associate my drinking with the patterns, with the manifestations, with the ways that it looked. So I considered an alcoholic somebody who, let's say, was homeless, right? So I made sure, no matter what, never to be homeless, you know, even though bouncing from here to there, you know, whatever was provided for me at any given time was basically homeless. You know, I made sure that I never was without somewhere to reside for a substantial period of time. Then when it got to a time where I couldn't control that anymore, then, oh, now that's not what makes me homeless. I'm sorry, that's not what makes me an alcoholic anymore. Now what an alcoholic is someone who drinks in the morning. So I'm not alcoholic. Oh, but when the party starts, you know, in the morning and continues the whole day, and so I'm drinking in the morning, oh, no, that's not what makes me an alcoholic anymore. Now what makes someone an alcoholic is if they drink alone. But when it comes to that time that I had to drink alone because no one else was coming fast enough, you know, it, I don't know if you're catching my drift, but it constantly changed. So there was never anything concrete for me to go by. So I basically never had a problem, you know? And those were the manifestations, right? What's more important than that, and obviously I only come to see this when I start reading the book line by line with the sponsor, is what is being manifested? It's an allergy. You know, it's, like I said before, an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It's not alcohol that's the problem. Because if you take, it's not alcohol that's allergic, it's me. If you take me and my mother and you give both of us alcohol, one thing happens to me that doesn't happen to her. So it's not alcohol, it's me, you know? And key word here for me is safely. I can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. I can tell you all sorts of things. I can say to myself, I'm only going to have one tonight and I'm going to go to sleep on time because I have an exam tomorrow morning. And who knows? Maybe that's going to happen. Usually not. The point is, my word and my intention means absolutely nothing in the face of alcohol. So it is unsafe. It is uncertain, you know? And then I wonder why my expectations are not coming to fruition. And now my problems are getting big, but I'm never equating my issues to alcohol. I just think life is real crappy. So I'm moving on, you know, miserable. And nothing really ever, and everything just keeps getting worse and worse and worse until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and find out what my problem is and what the solution for that is. Pass.
Thank you. Our next reading is also from page Roman numeral 28, that's XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others take with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Oof.
Yeah.
How many people could identify with that? My gosh, over and over and over. Like I said earlier, I felt good just reaching for the bottle because I just knew what it was going to do for me. From the time I was a little girl until the first time I had a drink, I drank at a pretty early age. And it just made me feel anything than what I felt. It made me feel grown up. I come from a family where they made wine and we were allowed to have some. And I just loved everything about it. When it passed through my lips, just loved it. And I was talking to my cousin about this and I said, you know, Paula, wasn't it great? You know, that wine we had at grandma's. She said, no, it was horrible. My perception, right? You know, but what it was like for me was I felt grown up. I felt anything than what I did feel. My brother, I laid under a 3-foot bottle of Galliano with a spigot under it. I was about 9 years old and my brother poured it in my mouth and I was like, this is fantastic. Like, I just couldn't wait to do it again. I just couldn't wait to do it again. So as time went by and I looked at the things that started happening that I never anticipated it happening and talked about, while they admit it is injurious, you know, I couldn't differentiate the true from the false. I just couldn't, because it just made me feel more attractive. It made me feel funny. Even though there was this other stuff going on that wasn't, you know, fantastic by any means, that led me to that incomprehensible demoralization time and time again. I never understood the insanity until somebody talked about it here. Why did I keep doing those same things over and over again? Because I just couldn't get enough. I couldn't control. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stay stopped. There were times where I thought, oh, you know, maybe I won't do it. But after that weekend, I would think, I would make all my apologies because I was doing something I shouldn't be doing. I was puking in somebody's closet. I was going somewhere or stealing money or trying to get more. Like, whatever we finished was never enough. And I would try to take from the parents, like cupboards to drink more. And it was a hell of a show, you know? So it also talks about that restlessness, irritability, and discontentment, you know, going to the liquor store. I knew what it was going to do for me. And I just felt it. And then when it entered my body and the spree that I went on, oh my gosh, like it just didn't stop at whatever I had. I would go into the city, look for after hours clubs. It just kept on going, you know, that phenomenon of craving, you know, once I had one, it kicks it off. You know, I hear people talk about, I had a craving for alcohol. Well, I can't really crave anything that's not in my body, but once I start, boom. So not to confuse the mental obsession with the physical craving. That was something that was really important for me, because once I started, it was like lit up, right? So that, when I said I wouldn't do it again, I just thought everybody did that when I was young. I remember people talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I never even knew there was such a thing. I thought it was a joke. You know, I thought it was like Smokeenders or something. Ah, you go to this class and you get your paper and you're out, you know. Little did I know that there was something called Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God that there was somebody here for me when I came to help me. So the love that I had for alcohol, you know, what it did for me was absolutely like nothing I had ever experienced before. And the oblivion that I allowed it to, you know, to do to me was just felt like home to me. So that mental obsession, very different than the craving. Esty, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Luann. Can we pull it up again? Yeah, thank you. He's already on it. He knows. So men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. I have a respect for alcohol because if I didn't have alcohol in my life, I don't think I would be here today. You know, and I'm grateful that it worked for as long as it did. And then it was time to find another solution. But essentially what I chased in alcohol was a spiritual solution. You know, I forgot that very quickly because immediately I found a group of people who were doing the same exact thing that I was doing. And at that young age, from then on, it became, I'm just trying to have fun. I'm just trying to have fun, you know. And it was fun for me because the effect that it produced for me was that it numbed me out. and I didn't have to live in reality. It was something to look forward to. It was a breath of fresh air. You know, I could just not think about anything and be and feel whatever I want. You know, so why wouldn't I chase that, you know? But what I wasn't able to do was to see the other side of it. And even like I shared before, the slight chance that I was able to see the consequential side of my drinking, it was so easily pushed aside because the positive, quote unquote, effect that it produced was so much greater, you know, and that was all I cared about. And thank God Alcoholics Anonymous provided me with a different solution that gives me that same ease and comfort that drinking did. Because if I'm not going to get that, then I'm just going to go back to drinking, you know? So make no mistake, Alcoholics Anonymous provides, you know, this program, you know, in finding a higher power gives me that effect that was produced by alcohol, that spiritual ease. You know, and like I said before, unable to differentiate the truth from the false. I always thought that I just changed my mind, you know, because if I continue with the example mentioned previously, if I knew that I had an exam the next day, and you see, it was very important for me to maintain my academic stance, you know, so that I could prove to myself that I was okay. If I knew I had an exam the next day, that wasn't going to stop me from going out to drink, but I would say, okay, tonight I'm only going to have two or three or four. And then I would get to the bar or club or friend's house or whatever it was and decide, oh, you know what? That doesn't matter anymore. You know, thinking that I'm making the decision, you know, to be reckless. So trust me, if there was a way that I could drink that much and not be reckless, I would have chosen it. You know, in hindsight, and by the way, everything that I share is in hindsight. I was unaware of any of this. You know, looking back at the record, there was never a choice. There was just no power behind it. Once that alcohol was in my system, like I said, it made the choices for me. Alcohol was my master, you know, and I didn't mind. For a long time, I did not mind until I did, you know, and thank God I came here. And looking in hindsight as well, I could see that my drinking truly was a phenomenon, right? I see that this thing is happening. This girl who is so confusing, you know, she seems so put together and so, you know, responsible 1 minute and the next she's like a Tasmanian devil, you know, running rampant. It's something I was able to see, but not really explain. So reading this stuff with my sponsor provided me such a sense of relief that finally, you know, there was an explanation for all of it. And therefore I didn't have to be afraid to admit it. Pass.
One more thing I forgot, that last line, this is repeated over and over, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. There's very little hope for his recovery. You know, I just want to say that God gave me that. God gave me that. Had it not been for that entire psychic change, you'd have somebody else here tonight. You know, so I just wanted to talk about that. So thank you.
Thank you, Luann. Thank you, Esty. Now, from that same page, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
And this is, this psychic change that it talks about, you know, had to occur, which thankfully it did. after this few simple rules, which were the 12 steps and the willingness, right? So, man, I am so grateful that I have a different life today. I'm not the same person who I was. And, you know, I get to do this deal with, you know, other people and bring somebody through the step work. And I get a new experience every time I do it. You know, I first look at this the first page. And when I look at the first page of it being blank, just to remind myself that I don't know anything. You know, every time I go through this, I get a completely new experience. And when I get, and I go through it with somebody else, just something hits me a little bit differently, you know. So the way I was the first time versus the second time, the third time, and every time I go through it, I have a different, something different happens to me. I have a whole new experience. And thank God for that. Because of, you know, I'm grateful that I don't have what I had the first, you know, year, you know, because man, there was a lot of stuff going on in between, you know, these years, you know, and thankfully I get to do the work over and over again and bring somebody over and, you know, and it still gives me hope, you know, so just tonight, you know, we have, you know, new people that are here, you know, coming back, like what a miracle, you know? So when I look at the psychic chain, and it talks about the very same person who seemed to be doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a simple rule. So people talk about the steps are suggested. Well, right here, you know, there's a requirement of a couple of things I need to do to, you know, to have the psychic change happen for me. And I had to have willingness. Thankfully, I had a sponsor who had a good working knowledge of the big book, who knew enough about alcoholism to help me. And it gave me hope, you know. I had a gift of desperation when I came in. And, you know, knowing that I get a different life back and not the old one that I had was far better than, you know, anything I ever could have imagined. So in the very, very beginning, you know, this isn't my first, I'm not a first nighter. So the first time I went into treatment was in 1989. My sober date is, God-given sober date is June 13, 2015. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Back then, there weren't really many people talking about a solution, talking about, you know, the big book or step work or anything like that. So the experience I had with doing any type of step work were, you know, steps on the wall, you know, and I clearly got off the wall results. I mean, I started stealing. I was doing crazy stuff. I mean, I was completely insane. I was suffering from untreated alcoholism, you know? And I knew that when I got to that fourth step and the fifth step, like I was never going to tell anybody what was going on. Like I just knew that, you know? And I, after 6 years, I wound up drinking again. And then I went back to meetings and I was told to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I did the same thing over and over again for about another 5 years. And what I've learned is that I could only hold my breath for so long. So God's grace lasted that long until I picked up again. And a lot of times I ask people, you know, who come back, because for me, I thought I drank because I didn't go to meetings, because that's what was told to me. It was told to me that you need to go to meetings. You know, it wasn't told. Only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules, which were the 12 steps. And my experience is that meetings didn't work. I mean, the fellowship is awesome, and it got me to a sponsor, and it works for a lot of people. So, you know, we also talk about like the spirit of the fellowship and the fellowship of the spirit and what that looks like. So when I ran into somebody who was able to help me, my life changed. It took on a new meaning. So, Esty, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Luann, for sharing. So they bring up the psychic change, right? I don't know about any of you guys, but I was intrigued. You know, well, what is this psychic change that they're talking about? And even though I didn't know what it was, I knew that I wanted it, you know, because I just wanted things to be different. You know, by the time I had really gotten into the big book, reading it line by line with my current sponsor, I was, I had 6 months away from a drink in Alcoholics Anonymous, but not being taken through the big book. And, you know, I'd come to believe the state that I was in, and I didn't want it anymore. I just really didn't want it. I didn't want to live life the way that I had been living it. And of course, I knew that drinking had to go with that, and everything else too, you know, all the dry goods, and it all had to go. I wanted that psychic change, you know, and I remember I went up to people in my home group, you know, and I would ask them, how did you do it? How did you do it? You know, how did you find your conception? How did you do this? How did you do that? And really what most people always just told me was, don't worry, don't worry. You're willing. That's the point. You're willing. Just keep going through the steps. And I'm like, F, like, give me a better answer. Like, tell me specifically what to do, and I'll do it to get this solution that I see working in everybody else's lives. But I was willing. So I took direction, and I continued to go through the steps. I took the steps with my sponsor, and after all, it had been granted to me as well, this psychic change. You know, I never liked to doom other people, and it always bothered me, like when my mom would say things like, oh, that person is, you know, never going to get better or whatever. But when it came to myself, I already felt doomed. You know, you didn't have to tell me. You know, if anything, the opposite, my mom or other family members would always talk me up. Like I was some, you know, the smartest, the best, the this, the that. And inside, like, I knew, you didn't have to tell me. I knew what was going inside of me. Trust me, it was eating me up, you know? So my problems really had me in despair. It was here that I was allowed, given the opportunity to make the connection between that crappy life, that nasty feeling inside, and my drinking, and then what that has anything to do with God. You know, I came to see how, what it is that's underlying my suffering, you know, and that it's essentially me. And now, how am I supposed to get rid of an allergy? Like, how do I conquer an allergy? How do I conquer a mental obsession? I don't, you know, I don't. And that's the entire point of step one for me, is to really, really allow me to believe that I'm doomed. I'm screwed if I don't get that power to conquer. But that power to conquer is not going to come from within me. It's going to come from deep, deep down inside me, you know, but it's not me. It's a higher power, and it has to be a power also that's greater than the spirit of alcohol, you know? So that must be something really, really big. And in order for me to get to that power, I just had to take certain proven and unfailing steps. And it worked. Thank God. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last reading is on page Roman numeral 30, that's XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence.
Hey guys, thanks. So prior to this, it talks about the certain types of drinkers, right? There's also, in Two Wives, it really talks about what type of drinker you fall under. You know, not many people read that chapter. You know, it's one that I've been brought through, and I'm grateful. When I first used to go to meetings, I used to just listen to the war stories and try to compare myself, you know, just like was said before, you know, nobody ever said I had to, you know, pass out or get a DUI or, you know, drink a certain amount of money, a certain amount of booze, or spend a certain amount of money, or, you know, to qualify as an alcoholic, wet my pants, you know, whatever it is. No, that's not what the deal is. You know, this powerlessness that we talk about in step one, it was finally conceding to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. And the first time I actually really said it and meant it, and I had really been honest about it, was truly a miracle, because I couldn't be honest about it. When I drank again, my family said to me, Luann, we just thought that you got better. And, you know, I love the families that are involved in Al-Anon, because they kind of, everything helps, right? So they didn't get it, you know, even though when they would visit me and when I was away in an institution, you know, they kept on blaming themselves, you know, like, where did I go wrong? I'm like, well, if you didn't maybe take folic acid and I had a cleft lip, maybe you'd have something to do with it, but this, it's okay, you know? And my mom just was like, maybe I could have been a better parent, you know, what could I have done differently? From a very little kid, I wanted to run away. I just wanted to run away. And I found it when I found booze. And when I conceded to my innermost self that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, after that dash, what does the unmanageability look like for me? It comes in, it's a spiritual deal, right? Like when all these issues start coming up and I don't know how to deal with them, I don't have a God in my life. So when I had that experience and, you know, that's my cat over here. He's got something to say about all this. Sorry about that. I didn't know how to function, without it. But so when we talk about qualifying and we look at these, you know, sorry, I'm so thrown off by my cat. When we look at qualifying an alcoholic, you know, can somebody really talk about what type of drinker they are before we get to this paragraph, right? For me, it was important. But the one symptom that we talk about, what I had in common, like I couldn't drink without drinking more. So that phenomenon of craving that we get to. So, you know, I would try to uniquely, you know, separate myself, you know, from somebody because they had a different story than I had, until somebody pointed out the phenomenon of craving, right? The manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates me from like my mom, you know? It sets me apart as a distinct entity, not to make me uniquely different than anybody else, you know, but it sets me apart from the people who don't have what I have. So when I sit in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, or I am sponsored by a woman who knows me without knowing me, what Bill had when he had Ebby talk to him, you know, it makes the hair stand up on my arms because they got it. You know, Dr. Bob thought he had religion and he thought, you know, he had a God in his life, but without his ego being smashed, he couldn't really get to God. And then when Bill talked to him about who he was and how he was and how he thinks, and Dr. Bob finally gets it, like one drunk talking to another is what really helps me. My parents didn't understand. They would give me the, you know, the punishment of why I drank and whatever. It just never worked. And I didn't care what you took away from me. I didn't care how much I was going to get punished. It didn't work, you know, I'm beyond human aid. So whether it's my own son that I can't show up for, whether it's my parents or anything like that, like I just can't do it. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated, you know, and how do I stay abstained? You know, do I believe that this could happen for me? Are the questions that, you know, I start to ask. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence, you know. So in order for this to be eradicated, I have to have entire abstinence. And that's why I'm not really willing to have alcohol in any form when we talk about like the tiramisu or whatever. I'm not going to order that stuff. Why? I don't need it. It's not important to me. It's not anything that's that's part of my life right now that I'm willing to have. So I'm just thankful that somebody showed up, you know, with a solution. I'm really thankful that every step is exactly in its proper place and outlined from step one. And we don't go down the road and talk about, you know, making an amends or doing an inventory before we talk to somebody about conceding to their innermost self first, because, and there's reasons why, you know, Dr. Silkworth talks about what that psychic change is lightly. Because there's a lot of people that come here that don't have a good experience with God, you know? And what that God looked like for me in the very beginning is very different than what it is today. You know, it was the God of my own experience that I get. And I can't give that to anybody except share my experience with what this process looks like with going through the step work and hope that somebody can get to a God of their experience by going through this step work. Because if I'm truly beyond human aid, if my son could have kept me sober, if my mom could have kept me sober, it would have happened a long, long time ago. And we're all here because we're all not there. So, you know, I think I have enough I've said about this paragraph. So thank you for letting me share, Esty.
Thank you, Luann. Thank you to your cat. A little humor is always necessary. Right. So all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. So Bill, you know, wrote the big book on behalf of himself and a couple little, I think a little bit over 100 others whom he closely got sober with. And, you know, and they're speaking for themselves, you know, and then they transmitted their experience into text. And then I can choose to identify with their experience. And that is, in fact, what I choose to do. So I identify as an alcoholic by definition of the big book. You know, I don't know. I'm sure there are people out there who identify and truly believe that they are alcoholic by some other definition of it. You know, but the common problem and the common solution for me come from this process, from Alcoholics Anonymous. And can you just pull up the text again? I'm so sorry. So again, you know, first and foremost, I need to concede to having this physical allergy, and the amount of pages that are spent on covering every loophole, you know, and that my little alcoholic mind can try to open up and crawl through, you know, it's made pretty, pretty clear to me that I have a very strange reaction to alcohol, and that once it's inside me, and I cannot control what happens to me, to you, or to anyone else that I may come in contact with. And I like that, you know, it says, with any treatment that they are familiar with that has tried to have been implemented by family, you know, romantic partners, doctors, whatever it is, did not work. You know, none of it ever worked. I mean, I don't know. I was the biggest power in my own life. You know, I was the God of my own life. And if I couldn't get myself sober for me, then there was no way you were getting me sober. So I like how here they're kind of alluding to the next part of what it is that I suffer from, right? That meant it says the only relief we have to stress is entire abstinence, right? So if the only thing that I suffer from is a physical craving to alcohol, then all I have to do is not pick up alcohol. Right. And so all the big book would say is, hi, don't pick up a drink. Hi. And that would be it. But there's a whole lot of other pages, you know, so you clearly know there's something more, and there always is with us alcoholics. There's action and more action. Right. So something else happens inside of me that even when the drink is not in me and that physical craving has not been set off. My brain is technically sober, right? I should be thinking sanely. I'm not being influenced by alcohol. And somehow I keep going back to that thing, you know, which has so obviously caused so many issues. So something else is going on in my mind, you know, that also makes me different from other people in a very special way. And I'm assuming you guys are going to be talking about that next week. So that's exciting. And I hope that, you know, for anybody here who has not yet identified as an alcoholic, has been able to learn something about yourself through the experiences of the Big Book and me and Luann. And if you need any help or are willing and really wanting to discover the truths about yourself, I know that Luann and I are both very eager and willing to help. So I'm going to post my number in the chat, and I'm assuming Luann will too. Thank you so much for having us tonight.
And I have one more thing as I was reading it on the screen, because thanks SD too, man. What a great meeting, and thank you all for allowing us to be here and share on this. And I'm laughing because I don't remember anything, you know. So I'm so glad SD says, you know, put it back on the screen again. I actually have something called cognitive impairment from a mycotoxin reaction. So I don't know how long it'll be before I remember again. But anyway, and that's the truth. But when I look at this, it has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. And they tried everything. I mean, they tried the belladonna treatments when Bill was sick. In the very beginning, Ebby brought the Washingtonians. You know, they did it by just trying to keep each other accountable. It didn't work. You know, worked for a little bit of time, but you know, it didn't work. And when Ebby finally talked to Bill about the tenets in the Oxford group, he was able to get the gist of kind of what was going on. And even till, you know, until the end, you know, Bill still always referred to Ebby as his sponsor, because Ebby was the first one who was able to talk to Bill, one drunk talking to another, who was able to finally help him. And he was on his, you know, way with doing the tenets of the Oxford group, which were, you know, great. But thankfully, Bill sat down, and if anybody ever had the chance to read or listen to the writing the Big Book, just listen to it. It's a great listen. And what happened when this whole deal like went down is pretty amazing. So they learned from each other. They learned from their mistakes. They were going back and forth from Akron to New York, and you know, just like we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, some people, we need everybody, you know, my cat's at it again. So this is lucky. Some people are okay with, you know, just put the plug in the jug, which is what somebody told me, Luann, just don't take the first sip. If I could just do that, I said, I wouldn't be here. But there's somebody that they can help. It just wasn't me. You know, so I'm thankful that my sponsor was able to take me through the step work, because it truly saved my life. And if you're new, or even if you've been here for a long time and you're not feeling great and you feel like crap and you're feeling like there's got to be something different, there is. There absolutely is. And it's defined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It gives us specific instructions to take. And there are people who can take you through that. You never have to go through what you've been through. When things were going, I was bringing a meeting into the jail, and I was so grateful to be able to see those people in meetings outside. I'm a GSR in my home group. I bring commitments into treatment center and do whatever I need to do. Area 44 Convention Committee, my district, and I try to get involved with service. So plug in, dig in, you know, it's all good stuff, you know. Thank you all,
Luann.
And I'm grateful for everybody who came before me. God bless.
Thank you, Luann and Esty. Thank you very much. I'm grateful to you both for joining us. And David will be unmuting everyone at the end of the meeting after we close, so that everyone else can thank you as well. David did put our PayPal link in the chat. That's our basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, intergroup, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about our common welfare and safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? I don't see any virtual hands. Okie dokie. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members raise their hands. Thank you. Sponsorship question, excuse me. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Again, thank you, Luann and Esty. And let's see, I'm going to need a volunteer to read. You know what? I'll read it. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. This is the last two paragraphs on page 164 in the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. And David, I don't know if you unmute folks or what, but...
People can unmute themselves whenever okay. they would like.
Okay.
After the Lord's Prayer. Or during, I don't care.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you guys so much. That was amazing. Just amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you both. That was awesome.
Thanks,
y'all.
Thank you.
Feel free to number for anybody, for anything. I do have to go, but I don't put my number there for no reason. So please feel free to use it.
I'll give you a call later.
I love you.
Love you too, hon. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciate you.
Ciao, everyone.
Thank you, my friends. Thank you guys so much for being here. I'll see you soon. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow, David.
Thank you, Luann.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again.
So wonderful.
Thanks for being here.
I'm going to let this flow over me and in me today, this evening.
It's good stuff. I'm grateful. I get so nervous up here.
Oh, you did great. You're awesome.
You didn't show it at all.
Oh my gosh. Chris is so funny. He texted me today. He's like, what about tomorrow? I was like, no, please. I don't want to do it.
You know. Your cats are riot.
So cute. Oh my gosh.
Mine started. He was wondering where the cat calling was coming from. He was about to jump up on the bed.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh. So you have a male?
Yes. Yes. He's fixed, but God, I can't imagine what it'd be like if he wasn't fixed. He's
so good. Yeah. Mine, he just won't stop. I was away and I came back and he just wants me to sit with him. You know, he's one of my he's a feral. He came in and he never left. And he just loves to be cuddled, snuggled. He's really just one of those cats. He just wants to be just loved. He loves when I lay on the floor with him and everything. But that's funny that yours heard it. And I know I got thrown off. I thought, oh, my gosh, really? At a time like this, I fed him. I fed him two times. I thought maybe if I feed him extra, he won't meow.
The concept of animals and our pets, which are family members, they don't know what a phone or a computer is. They think you're talking to them. They really do. They know no different, you know? So, yeah.
That darn cat. What a great group you guys have here.
Thank you.
It's awesome. You guys are, you're in Virginia Beach, right?
Yes.
Norfolk.
Yeah.
Oh, well, all over. Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe there's some people from California in here for all I know.
People in Norfolk don't like to be called Virginia Beach.
Them fighting words?
And Virginia Beach is even worse about that. Don't call anybody from Virginia Beach from Norfolk.
So this is in Norfolk? That's where this is? I mean, oh, okay.
That's where our home group meets, but we are from all over the cities, Chesapeake and Virginia Beach.
When we had a physical location, it was in Norfolk. We may have one again someday. Who knows?
Yeah, we just had a business meeting. We don't know. Right. Actually, up by us, we had people work. They're going into treatment centers now, which is kind of weird, you know? Yes. A friend of mine, I don't know if he's on here, Anthony, he'd be a character to get on here. He's got a good message. Sometimes we bring like a pathway to power style meeting into his recovery where he works at the recovery center. So it's pretty wild, you know? So, he's really animated and like gets into the stuff. And some days he'll be like talking to me. And like, did you just read what that said? I'm like, yeah, it's okay. You know? And, but it's great. You know, he's just so passionate about it. And, you know, and he's the one, you know, when I go through, you know, two wives, you know, and I've been through with him, you know, and it's a whole other deal going through there, you know, and a lot of people don't have a good experience with it and they think it's like an old boys club, but there's a lot of good principles in that chapter, you know?
I agree.
And you know,
which one are you talking about?
Two wives.
Oh, two wives. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, well, Bill wrote it. We should, you know, it's, you get, you know, what you get from it is, you know, for me, again, what is my experience with it, right? I mean, you know, depending on who takes me through it, you know, but it was a wonderful experience to do it. There's a lot of principles, you know, that were in here. And I think it's helpful to a lot of, you know, families. I dig it. So, but that's it. But I love how Esty talked about, you know, all of these people, like we have that phenomenon of craving, like doesn't matter what type of drinker, you know, we have that phenomenon of craving. So, you know, am I going to be like a type one drinker and separate myself from like the type four? Well, tell me how it's going to work. You know what I'm saying? Because it didn't work for me, you know, and I would uniquely separate, you know, and that's why we have a lot of other fellowships coming in AA fellowship or that uniquely don't identify with an alcohol problem and then may have a drug problem and uniquely identify as something different. Now, will the 12 steps work for them? Of course, right? Mm-hmm. And in the very beginning, when I first came, I used to go to OA meetings and NA meetings. But when I really looked at this step work that, you know, I was exposed to in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, wow, like, lit my world on up, you know? And I'm so grateful that somebody was able to help me. And when I suffer from all the other things, it's spiritual, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. I didn't spend time with God that day. I didn't spend time in meditation. And I'm stuck in self, you know, stuck in self. I'm thinking about me. I'm not thinking about anything else. No, doesn't happen. It's the awareness is better than what it was, you know, but, you know, that thankfully I've been, you know, recovered from, you know, bulimia for over 30 years, you know, for that I'm grateful. Yes. And I get to, you know, kind of have a normal food life these days. I was pretty sick. But I also had all the other stuff going on too, that I wasn't aware of. And I was still, you know, drinking and, but you know, alcohol was my master. So, you know, when I get to where it's brought me today, and thankfully that psychic change I had is the result of doing these steps. And, you know, what am I doing to help somebody else out? There's a lot of people that don't sponsor people, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, they saved my life.
I think women have a tougher time with that. Women, I think in general have a tougher time in AA.
You mean just with the food or with?
Because of sponsorship.
Oh man.
Yeah. Not as many women are willing to sponsor. And then you've got the whole population that's willing to help them, you know, the men.
I got you.
That's all I'm saying.
It's tough up here in the Northeast.
I can't tell you how many women will call and go, who should I, you know, will you be my sponsor? I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Why don't you call so-and-so? Why don't you call so-and-so? And it's a really short list.
Yeah.
Very few women in this area are zealous about sponsoring other women.
I'm so grateful that I found mine. I'm so grateful. And the community of women that surround me. And it was so unexpected because I was a hairdresser for many years, and it was so surface, you know, the women in that community, it was just service. And, you know, I like your earrings. Oh, cute shoes. You know, you look pretty today. But after that, it was like crickets. And I like a good stimulating conversation that I'm hungry to hear what you have to share. And this is what I've gained from this program. And it was not, I didn't have preconceived ideas. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. So every day is a gift that I learn something from the ladies that generously give to me. And I mean, I weep tears of gratitude today, not sadness and struggle. And it's just amazing. It really is amazing. So, yeah,
that's
when
cool,
I hear
right? Everybody's my teacher nowadays, you know?
Yes.
Like those, you know, the people who are just coming back, I need them too.
You know?
I need them too. So,
yeah.
There's Christine.
Well, thank you, Luann. It's been wonderful. It's been stimulating and.
Thanks, Nancy, are you sponsoring people too, Nancy?
I'm almost 6 months clean, so not yet, but it's definitely in my wheelhouse, in my future.
Nancy, it's been a joy to watch you just come alive in this whole thing.
Thank you, David. That's so sweet.
It's just been amazing.
What step? So you
amazing.
Have a
congratulations.
Taking you through the step work. So that's beautiful.
Oh, fantastic. And I relapsed and I had to state my case to my sponsor and rededicate. And she was on board, but I had to prove myself, not only to her, but to myself, and be all in and receptive. So it's been wonderful. It's you know, I realized what I didn't get, what I didn't understand. And that's what led me back. I don't regret it for one second because it got me back in a different way, you know? So, yeah, I'm so grateful. I really, really am.
Yeah, it took me a while. I'm not a first nighter, you know?
I'm sorry.
I'm not a first nighter. I'm grateful that somebody was there to help. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I didn't concede to my innermost self. I didn't do any step work. God's grace lasted as long as it did. And, you know, and that was it. You know, I didn't do any step work. So I didn't relapse from anything because I had no program. And that's the truth. I had no program. I had nothing. I was just, man, thank God. I this time was a surrender that I just knew that, oh my gosh, like I told my sponsor, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And then my ego started to rebuild itself, you know? And then I found myself, I don't really want to do that. And I don't want to do this. She goes, you know, I said, you know, I don't like that. She goes, I don't care if you like it, just do it. You know? So, but thank you guys so much.
It's been beautiful. It's been lovely. Yeah. And God bless you all. You enrich my life in a way that no one has in my life. So thank you.